Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia dignitaries and ulama all across the world of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen and Shaykh Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding muhaddisin and fuqaha of the Shiite world, the author of two magnum opus, Al-Tahzi wal-Istibsar, that is Muhammad ibn Hassan ibn Ali ibn al-Hassan, mainly known as Shaykh al-Tusi or Shaykh al-Ta'ifa. Okay, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of Shaykh al-Tusi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, Shaykh al-Tusi, known as Shaykh al-Ta'ifa, Shaykh means the
head. Of a tribe.
Ta'ifa is the tribe, or yes. Tribe. Obviously, when we talk about the tribe or ta'if, it means the Shia tribe.
Yes.
And he got the title of the head of the Shia tribe, Shaykh al-Ta'ifa. And he was born in 385 Hijri Qamari, which was the time of Shaykh al-Mufid. Obviously, he has seen Shaykh al-Mufid in his time, because Shaykh al-Mufid passed away in 413. Hijri Qamari. He was born in Tus, which is one of the cities of Khurasan. Obviously, we know that Imam Rada alayhi salam also was buried in Tus, which is known as Mashhad of today.
Yes.
So he was known Tusi because he belonged to the place of Tus. So this was the belonging, like where he used to belong.
Okay.
The way we have different names, like from the cities. So he was born there. He was known as Abu Ja'far, the third Abu Ja'far. Because after Sheikh Qulani, the first Abu Ja'far, and then Sheikh Sadduq, the second Abu Ja'far, he was known as the third Abu Ja'far in his time. He was from the students of Sheikh Mufid, and he was there for 5 years with him, and then he benefited from other scholars as well. He was a so learned person that the caliph, the Abbasid caliph, he gave him the chair of the theology to Sheikh al-Tusi in Baghdad.
Yes.
And he headed that place. And obviously in his life what we see is he was the founder of the Hawza Ilmiya in Najaf.
That's right.
The Islamic seminary of Najaf.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is said there was a seminary, but obviously, you know, when a person goes there, a personality, and he expands or he gives the advancements to something, obviously he's known as the father. So we can say that he founded and expanded the Islamic seminary in Najaf. And later he was buried in Najaf as well.
Yes.
So he was there. And the time when he passed away, he made a will that to change his house to a mosque.
Yes.
And that mosque is still there.
Still
in
available. Yes.
Still available there.
His grave is over there too.
Yes, his grave is in the house, in the masjid.
Yes.
So basically he was one of the theologians, he was one of the jurisprudents, and the advances which he made to the, we can say, in the writing style of the books, basically, because it is said like he was the first person who changed the books as mubawwab.
Mm-hmm.
Mubawwab means bab. Bab is chapter-wise.
Chapter by chapter.
Now we have the books chapter by chapter.
Yes.
Chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3.
Okay.
Before that, the books were in the form of amali.
Mm-hmm.
Amali is like, you know, if you use a rough copy,
yes,
a rough notebook, you write a maths today, And after that, if you have the class of, I don't know, physics, kalam. You write down yes. kalam or anything.
Kalam, fiqh, tariq,
so
you know, akhlaq.
Generally, the ulama, they used to write the ahadith and not used to separate them as a chapter.
It was miscellaneous, as we
say. As a miscellaneous books.
Yes.
So he was the first person who changed the books into the chapter.
Chapter-wise.
Yes. Chapter-wise.
Okay, that's all right. So what about his scholarly look at the Shiite legacy and the world? From among, we can say, the four authentic books of the Shiite world, two belong to Sheikh Al-Tusi, and these make him very much great, Al-Tahzib and Al-Istibsar. Let's talk about his scholarly life, Sheikh Rouhani.
Yes, of course. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One of the two main works of Sheikh Al-Tusi, rahmatullah alayhi, as you rightly mentioned, is Al-Istibsar and Al-Tahzib. Sometimes we might think that, okay, these scholars, these ulama, they are like traditionists, I mean, mm-hmm. akhbari.
Yes.
Just referring to ahadith. While in reality, as it was discussed about and mentioned about Shaykh Mufid as well, this scholar, I mean, Shaykh Tusi also, they tried to establish a kind of basis for ijtihad as well.
Yes.
In their own times.
Yes.
Because at the time of Ghaybatul Kubra, the major occultation, so of course sometimes they were in need of referring to some of the ahadith which explain, for example, the new coming kind of issues, but there were no ahadith.
Yes.
So that's why they tried to teach their students for the coming generations to actually sometimes to establish or to found a kind of system based on which they could respond and answer all the questions, particularly the jurisprudential questions about the new coming issues and, let's say, things.
Yes.
So this is one of the important effort that was made by this great scholar. The other one is that Hawza Ilmiya of Najaf, the Islamic Seminary of Najaf, is, we can say, the legacy or the heritage of this scholar,
mm-hmm.
because he was the founder of this Hawza Al-Ilmiya.
Yes.
So now for 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
We have great scholars that they were studied there, and they became great, great scholars in the history of Islam.
It's better to say that Sheikh Al-Tusi has changed the city of Najaf into
like
the scholarly
university
of the Shiite world.
Scholarly city,
the Hawza of which is still active, producing so many outstanding scholars.
Yeah, that's and the other nice point about Sheikh Al-Tusi is this, that he tried to preserve the independency of Islamic seminary from the governments.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to
to
establish a kind of educational system that should be independent from the power, from the kings, from the Salatin.
Yes.
Because of what? Because Salatin and kings always, you can say, misuse or make use of these scholars, these educational systems, to spread their own or to let's say, to follow their own interests.
Yes.
But if you are independent, as nowadays we see Hawzat al-Ilmiya, like Hawzat al-Najaf is always like independent Hawza, it is because of this that they have kind of freedom to talk about each and everything, to issue their fatwas, to actually express their own opinions and ideas. I think this was one of the great efforts that was made by Sheikh Al-Tusi and the next coming scholars to establish a kind of independent Hawzawi system or Islamic seminary system. This is the other point which is really significant about Sheikh Al-Tusi. And the third point that I want to mention is that it deserves to be mentioned here is that at the time of Sheikh Al-Tusi, when Saljuqi Salatin, they conquered Baghdad.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they burned the library of Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheikh Al-Tusi was about to be killed by this Salatin of Saljuqi.
Maybe one of the main reasons to migrate to Najaf was this.
That's why,
Okay.
It was a very good experience for him to make a kind of independent kind of system, independent libraries, independent sources, so that it should not
to be away from
on,
the attacks.
To be away from the attacks, to be away from these kind of things.
Yes.
So that's why I think he served Tashayyu in a very great way.
That's right.
And he paved the ground for the independency of Hawza al-Ilmiya of Najaf for 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of the significant points that should be mentioned.
That's all right. But why these two books are among the four authentic books? I mean, Al-Istibsar but Al-Tahzib. What are they exactly about Sayyid Muhsin Nahwi?
Well, when we talk about the first book, Al-Istibsar fi Makhtalafa من الأخبار.
Yes.
This book, the first book, obviously, it is a compilation of the jurisprudic traditions, which is less than the Tahzib al-Ahkam. Mm-hmm. And it is said like it has almost 5,558 hadiths or traditions in this book. And he basically made three, we can say, like chapters in this book. The first two are about the ibadat, the worshipping of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When we talk about the ibadat, we means like worshipping in the form of prayer, daily prayers, the fasting, the hajj, khums, the zakat, jihad. Obviously, these are known as ibadat.
Yes.
The ones which we known as furu'ad-din, basically, in our Islamic terminology.
Yes.
And the third part was related to uqud, contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the trading contract, we have
the marriage contract,
the ahkam, we have some other things, hudud, which is like the punishments and all those, or the diyat is like blood money and all those. So this was the third portion. So basically, he was the first person who I said like he changed the things into chapter wise.
Yes.
So Al-Istibsar had all these things.
Okay.
And obviously, this was the book of Al-Istibsar. And the
Tahzib, what about Tahzib?
The beauty of the book was he started from the narration of like the beginning was started by the narration of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam.
Okay.
For example, about the tahara, about the purification. And then he ended his book with the narration of Imam Sadiq. So he was kind of into this, that if I start this chapter with this imam, I will end the chapter with the same imam. So
These are hadithi books.
Yes, these are hadithi.
But in relation to fiqhi matters?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, obviously, you know, when we talk about the hadithi or fiqhi, now we separate these things. Earlier at that time, it was not separated in this way. This is the advanced, we can say, sciences, when the science is advanced. So we have everything separately. Now, we talk about the, for example, fiqh. Obviously, fiqh is the combination of hadith as well, the Quran and hadith.
Yes.
So what he used to do, he in Tahzib al-Ahkam, the second book that we have, that was the fiqh jurisprudic or ahkam al-shar'i. It has the Islamic law in it. So when he was bringing Islamic law, he used to bring the verses as well. For example, the prayer, about the prayer, this is the specific verse. And in order to, narrate it from the imam, he used to bring the traditions as well from the imam. So these were the books. It wasn't just the way we have the ruling book right now. For example, the ruling book of Ayatollah Sistani or Ayatollah Khamenei.
Yes.
It just says that, for example, if something has become najis, how to purify it. In these books, they used to bring a hadith.
Yes.
That you need to purify this. This is the hadith. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, for example, has said to do this in this way.
And sometimes the people found some contradictions, at least in the surface level of the ahadith. I think through this book, especially, Tahzib, they can find the answers to the true sense of the word, okay?
Yes.
Because, for example, on this contract, on this act, on this blood money or something like that, we have a tradition from Imam Reza alayhi salam saying something, but we have the same tradition, for example, or a tradition on this matter from Imam Musa Kazem or Imam al-Hussein, Imam Ali alayhi salam, which seems to be in contradiction when referring to the fiqhi aspect. So this needs to be clarified more.
Yes, it was clarified at that time by these. Obviously, they used to bring different ahadiths and then give their own result.
Yes.
And the same system is followed now as well. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when a mujtahid at this time, he gives a fatwa, he looks at different ahadiths.
Yes.
The way you said. And then he tries to find out, like, what is the reason of this? Sometimes, obviously, because of the circumstances, because we do not know why they said so.
Yes.
What was the circumstances? Because everything is according to. And sometimes this is something which is, we call it kulli.
General.
A general law is something else. A specific thing is something else. So sometimes because we are unaware of the background, that's why we have these, we see these contradictions. But obviously, the ulama, the scholar, especially the Shaykh al-Ta'ifa, he has attended to this matter and he wrote Tahzib al-Ahkam in the same way.
Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Even among the first exegetes of the Holy Quran, At-Tabyan fi Tafsil al-Quran, which is still referred to, is among the most outstanding works of Sheikh At-Tusi. What about the other works, Sheikh Rouhani? Do we have, for example, another work outstanding?
Yes, of course. You know, Sheikh At-Tusi rahmatullah alayh was a mufassir, an interpreter of the Holy Quran. As well, he was a theologian. He was a faqih. That's why in all these different fields of studies, he was also adib. A literary kind of figure
yes.
as well.
Yes, yes.
So in all these areas, he has some works. But I think the two points that should be focused on here in this episode is this, that first of all, we should know that the Imam alayhim salatu wassalam, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, Imam Hussein, and Imam Sajjad. These
yes.
three Imams did not have any chance, we can say, to spread the teachings because the situation was so much problematic mm-hmm. and difficult for them. Imam Kadhim alayhi salatu wasalam, it says that for 19 years he was captured, he was imprisoned by yes. Harun al-Rashid. And Imam Hadi, Imam Hassan al-Askari, and Imam Jawad. These three
yes.
imams also were under the control of the Abbasid caliphs.
Mm-hmm.
They could not do a lot. The only imams they had a bit chance to spread the teachings of Islam is Imam al-Sadiq, Imam al-Baqir, Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wasalam.
Yes.
So, these three imams had this chance to teach the people the doctrines and teachings of Islam. That's why the scholars like Sheikh Tusi, if they collected lots of ahadith, lots
yes.
of traditions, lots
yes.
of narrations, because they knew, okay, the rest of the imams did not have the chance. So only these three great imams had the chance. So that's why they tried their best to collect as much as they could, the all
right.
different traditions, narration, ahadith, by traveling here and there, searching different libraries, sometimes put themselves into
mm-hmm.
dangers. And this way, I think they played a very great role, and these kind of ahadith book are really, really important. But, of course,
okay.
they were not only the narrators or
yes.
transmitters of ahadith.
No.
Because...
They were, as you said, the thinkers.
Yeah, the thinkers
yes, the
as well.
The organizers.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
And the other point is that, unfortunately, in the history of Islam, if you see that, all the different people that sometimes they are misguided or
mm-hmm.
deceived by the different, let's say, sects or so-called scholars, pseudo-scholars, is by the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Quran is misinterpreted.
Yes, yes.
So one of the great effort that they made is in regard with the Holy Quran.
That's right.
That, for example, this Shaykh At-Tusi, rahmatullah alayhi, start to interpret the ayat of the Quran.
Very good.
Not only explain, rather to examine, to assess the other interpretations as well.
Based on ahadith.
Yeah, yeah. Based on ahadith.
This is important.
And based on aql.
This is important.
And based on
okay.
the viewpoints of the other scholars. Because sometimes,
right.
for example, some of the other scholars may misinterpret some of the ayat, some of the ahadith.
Yes.
So then Shaykh At-Taifa, Shaykh At-Tusi rahmatullah alayhi, try to interpret truly the ayat of the Quran by ahadith, if there were ahadith, if not by the pure, let's say, principles or aql or rational kind of ideas of the tashayyu'. I think this was very much important that Shaykh At-Tusi rahmatullah alayhi has done, because
yes.
Quran is the most and the first and the most important source of ahkam, source
That's
of
right.
Islamic teachings and doctrines. That's why these scholars refer to the Quran as well. And
okay.
Yeah, this is the
That's
point
right.
that there is a very nice story about Imam Hassan al-Askari, that once the Muslim philosopher Kendi
yes.
Once wanted to write a book saying that, okay, in the Quran there are something wrong, false, al-ayadu billah, God forbid. Then Imam al-Hassan al-Askari, through one of his students, told him that, okay, you might misunderstand this
mm-hmm.
ayat. It
yes.
is because of misconception that you have from the Ayatul Quran. No, not because of the Ayatul Quran itself. So you see, by this way, Imam Hassan al-Askari taught the scholars of tashayyu like Sheikh At-Tusi that, okay, sometimes you have this responsibility to interpret the Holy Quran.
Right.
Because in every century, we can say, in every time, we need the new interpretations of the Holy Quran. That's why in every centuries we should have new interpretation of the Holy Quran by the great scholars.
Yes.
Because there are lots of misunderstanding, misinterpretation of the ayat of the Quran. That's why I think from this perspective also, the role of Sheikh Tusi and the history of the Shia in Islam is very great.
Also, ahadith, as you said, are misinterpreted because of maybe lack of the knowledge, because that is the Kalam al-Masum. The Kalam al-Masum is very much close to revelation even, okay? We might not understand the mere text, and the literal translation will not answer. That's why they refer you.
And
have
also
to
that
refer.
The other important point was this, that many times in the history, our ahadith, our libraries were burned.
Burned out, that's
All the sources, all the collections of ahadith were unfortunately set to fire. So that's why they tried a lot to keep those ahadith, at least that they have access to those sources. I think this effort was really great.
That's right.
And significant in the history.
Also the book Al-Ghaybah, which is about, we can say, the cultation of Imam Ash. This is also a nice reference for so many doubts and questions regarding Imam Ash. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Sheikh At-Tusi or Sheikh At-Taifa. In the year 460, according to the Hijra calendar, this outstanding man passed away. His tomb is a visiting place for so many pilgrims in this holy city of Najaf in Masjid Sheikh At-Tusi. We can say very close in vicinity of the tomb of Imam Ali alayhi salam and the holy shrine of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Sheikh Rouhani. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Allah.